I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. I'm here today with Greg Bennett, an angel investor in the Seattle, Washington area, and you can find Greg on LinkedIn and follow him on Twitter at Greg Z. Bennett. Welcome, Greg. So great to have you with us today.
Great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, of course. And Greg, to start out, I would love for you to share with us a little about your background and how you got interested in tech and crypto.
Well, I've been a serial entrepreneur for a number of years, and I've been an angel investor for 20 years. So I've always loved investing in small companies with bright people and bright ideas. And so I tend to have invested a little bit of money in a lot of companies, and I've invested in about 100 companies over the past 20 years. And my son got me into crypto by graduating with a degree of finance in the University of New South Wales in Australia, and came home with this wide-eyed idea that crypto was going to take over the world. And I, being an older, establishment, more oriented person, had to sit down and think about it. But I was in the early internet era too, and I heard the same resistance to the internet at the time. And I thought, wow, this could be as big as the internet going forward. And I actually took an early liking to it and started thinking really heavily about it. So my son and I actually started up a Bitcoin mining operation, and of course did all of that at the wrong time, and learned a number of hard lessons through this process. But it's been an absolute fascination with me ever since, and I'm as more convinced about the future of crypto and Bitcoin than I've ever been. And even with today's pullback, it's just a bump in the road.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, Greg, would you, thank you for sharing that background with us, and would you share with us now what happened to you on April 15th, 2019?
Well, on April 15th, I remember really well. It was a bright, sunny day in Seattle, which is a little bit unusual. And at about noon, I'm sitting here talking with my son about some of our business office things, and all of a sudden my phone absolutely goes dead. And there's no cell signal, no nothing. And I notice also that I'm having trouble. I'm working on trying to get into my email accounts, and I can't get into my email accounts either. So I'm now thinking very bad things. I can't get into my email accounts. Now my phone's dead. This is not a spurious relationship. And so I immediately called up AT&T and tried to call up AT&T through another source. And they say, sorry, sir. That's not your account.
Oh, wow.
So they said, give me your code to get in. And I said, gave them my code, which is, of course, AT&T. You have a special code. So no, sir, that was recently changed. And so now I'm in full mode panic. And then I have been active in a number of, I'll call it crypto-related forums and conferences. And so I recognize that those folks who do those things are targets for this type of activity. But I really didn't understand what SIM swapping was at the time. I just knew my phone was out of whack. So, well, I won't go through all the details here, but eventually I finally get my phone back, and then I can't get into any of my crypto exchange accounts. I can't get into Bittrex. I can't get into Binance. I can't get into KuCoin. I can't get into Coinbase. All my crypto accounts have been hacked. In part, think about how easy this is. If somebody takes over your phone, and at this time, 2 or 3 years ago, you didn't have a lot of other authentication processes available or widespread to you besides SMS, besides texting. And so if you do not have control of your phone, and almost all the exchanges require you to use your email address as your username, all these folks have to do is use your username, your email address to try to log on to these accounts, and then say forgot password. And so then the password or the password reset is sent to your text, which is now controlled by another phone that you don't have. And they reset the passwords, and now they have complete control over getting into all of your crypto accounts. And in this particular day, they were successfully able to liquidate all of my non-Bitcoin assets. And then because I had 100 Bitcoin limit in this specific account with Bittrex, they were able to transfer 100 Bitcoin out of Bittrex into their controlled accounts And that was out 100 Bitcoin. Luckily, I was on top of it and sent SOS messages to Bittrex to freeze my account and to all my other accounts to freeze my accounts. But by that time, I was 100 Bitcoin light. And they repeatedly tried to go back in and take whatever else was left out of that account, but the 100 Bitcoin limit kind of covered the losses, if you want to call it, or mitigated my losses, if you want to say that. So since I feel in my heart that 100 Bitcoin is gone forever. And how are you going to track down Bitcoin in an anonymous source, an anonymous place? And I did look up the whole notion of SIM swapping. I realized it's probably SIM swapping. And I became an expert on it real quickly. And I reported it to the local police, the FBI, and to the REACT task force in Santa Clara. And talked to people and reached out to people who had been SIM swapped and asked their advice. And eventually connected to the REACT folks in Santa Clara, who connected me with folks in New York. And we kind of had a strategy going on. They seem to have found the person who had done it. If you remember about a year ago, there was a major hacking of Obama's account on Twitter and a bunch of other high profile people on Twitter. And as it turns out, it was the same person who did that, who did my hacking. It was a 17-year-old with an accomplice who was very good on a computer and had somehow was able to convince somebody at AT&T to give up my credentials and probably paid them for it. And they were actually very good, very efficient. I got to give them some credit for how good they were. But since that time, I did sue AT&T, and as a lot of people do, and I think a lot of people do get some recovery from AT&T because they allowed this to happen on their watch. And certainly I was able to get some recovery out of AT&T, not anything close to what I thought might be representative of the value. And as they did find the person, and they did end up with a settlement with the person, and in part the settlement was that he had to give up a bunch of BTC to be redistributed to the folks he stole it from. I wasn't the only victim here. And to this date, I have not received that compensation back. But from what I'm told, I probably will receive somewhere between 20 and 40% of my loss through that process. So in the end, I'll probably recover 50% plus of what I lost in BTC, which in today's value is a lot more than it was worth in those days. But it's been a harrowing process. And it wasn't a loss of money that was the worst part of this whole thing. The worst part of it was the complete loss of identity for a period of time, meaning I had no access to no email, I didn't have access to any of my financial accounts except for my Schwab accounts. I didn't have access to my pictures of my kids or the videos of my kids because they had completely hacked my email, and I had three email accounts that hacked them all. And they fooled people into believing bad things out of all three of them. So that was the worst part of this whole thing was figuring that out, just recovering my email addresses. And that caused me more stress than the loss of the money.
Right. Absolutely. And I'm so sorry that happened to you. And you are someone in the tech space. And so, you know, it sounds like you were able to kind of better know how to go about sort of, you know, how to try to recover this and try to find out who was doing this to you. But I can imagine if someone wasn't in that space, but they were somehow a victim of a SIM swapping, how utterly lost you would be, you know.
I think they'd be defenseless. They wouldn't know where to begin.
Right.
And I'm sure that there are many, many, many unreported SIM swaps and SIM swap hackings than there are reported ones. But you have to kind of be a target. And to be a target, you've got to be in the crypto space. People need to know you're in the crypto space. And I suspect that people find these things out by at the time conference meetings. So you know, you go to a conference and they give you agenda, a list of people who attended the conference, and that I think is how they got access to mine.
Okay, I was going to ask you if you had any suspicions on how you were targeted. And that's what you think. That's how you think they, you know, well, Graham Clark found you or what have you.
Well, these folks have to target people. And how do you target them? You need to find out their email addresses. You need to know that they're in the crypto space. And that at that time, you know, people were going to conferences all the time. And I suspect that's where they got it from.
Right. And it's my understanding that your attacker also tried to ransom you from your own email address to regain access to your information for an additional 50 Bitcoin. Was that what they tried to do as well?
Yeah. Well, they were into my accounts. They knew how much Bitcoin I had in other accounts. And so I actually had 4 email accounts. They had actually hacked all 4 of them. And then regave me access to 1 and used that as a vehicle to try to communicate and extort more from me.
Okay.
And I really didn't respond to any of my, it is a slippery slope here of how you respond. And I didn't respond.
Right. And we talk about that when we talk about ransomware too, as far as, you know, do you respond, do you not respond? You're not even guaranteed to get what they're offering to you if you respond, if you pay them, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And so you think that they reached out directly to AT&T. It's not as though with SIM swapping, sometimes people get a phishing email or someone is socially engineered themselves, but that didn't happen to you.
No, in fact, we believe the way it happened was that there was collusion and that somebody walked into a store in Boston. I actually got a customer support evaluation from a AT&T store in Boston on the day before, from a visit on the 14th, the 15th in Boston, on right in the middle of Boston.
Oh, wow.
And so it looks like somebody walked into a store and said they were me, and to an employee there who was collaborator, and was able to give them and swap out give them a phone with a new SIM card, and then wiped out my SIM card in that process.
Oh, wow.
So it's definitely an inside job, and the subsequent due diligence by my attorney absolutely collaborated that fact. It was an inside job at AT&T that they ported over my credentials to somebody who was had nefarious intentions.
Right. And Graham Clark, who was going by Scrim at that time as his pseudonym, he was in Tampa, right? So it wouldn't have been. So there were multiple people involved in this attack.
There was at least one other person who was a conspirator from afar, but there certainly were other people involved.
Yeah. Okay. And Greg, before this happened to you, had you heard of SIM swapping attacks?
No, I never. I became quickly an expert at it.
Right.
At
yeah,
the
sure.
time, it was not certainly in the forefront of my mind, and I thought that certainly SMS authentication was the way that it was state of the art for a long time before we got Google Authenticator and Authy and then Authy. But even that I'm suspicious of. I don't think that that's enough security for if you have a lot of money in these accounts, that you need more security than that.
Right. And are attackers targeting just for money, or are they also targeting for identity theft to some degree? Because I would think that go ahead.
From what I'm seeing, this group invested in SIM swapping are really after money.
Okay.
identity theft is down the road. Now, when they took over my identity, they took over everything. I mean, I think they were just messing with me. They took over my Starbucks account, my Costco account. I mean, they took over everything that they possibly could think of. Well, think of it. They have control over my email. They see all my email messages. They see everything. You know, everybody sends you email about your account, and they send it to your email address that they have on record. So they have a gold mine for figuring out how to torment you.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
And they did.
And why do you, like, were they tormenting you just to try to get more money out of you because they had that visibility?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely. It was very hard to get back my email addresses. That was not a trivial thing at all. Gaining back control of me, it was, for Gmail especially, was near impossible. And I'm really sympathetic, and we've got to change how this happens for people who have had their accounts hacked. Recovering your accounts is something the email providers have to be a lot more flexible with. I was able to recover my Yahoo account, which was my recovery account for my Gmail account. And I was finally able to get my Gmail account open, but they won't let you talk to a person. It's all automated, and it's very impersonal, and you can't talk to a person.
Okay. Wow. And even though you were working with authorities, you couldn't, like, there was no one to actually speak with.
There's nobody to talk to. When this happens, there's nobody to talk to. Think about it. You get SIM swapped. Who do you call?
Yeah. Right.
Who do you call? You're going to call your local police. They have no idea what's going on. You report it to the FBI, and they don't even acknowledge that you send a report in. So then what do you do?
And you worked. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, you ultimately ended up working with the Secret Service. Is that correct? How did you, who did you end up working with, and how did that all come together?
Well, I don't know how all this works together, but when they finally captured Graham,
okay,
they made it known to me that there was probably some recovery that was available to me. I got in the mail, I got a notice from the Secret Service, and I guess this whole cryptocurrency crime division within the federal government resides in the Secret Service somehow. And so I went online with them and did an interview to verify that, yeah, I did have all this stolen. And there was I spent a half hour interviewing with an agent. And they said, they follow up and said, hey, eventually you may get some recovery here.
Right.
So I'm hopeful for my online interview that there may be some recovery in the February, March timeframe of this year, which we're already into.
Right. And was that the time frame that they gave to you?
Yeah, and this is back in November or so, maybe even late October. So they said it was going to be a 5 or 6 month process.
On top of your already couple of year process.
Yes. Well, it's been almost 2 years now.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it's,
things move slow.
They do. Yeah, that sounds excruciating. I'm so sorry that it's still. It's not like go ahead.
But for people who do have significant amounts of cryptocurrency out there, the custody security has improved a lot. I don't think there's any substitute for a hardware key or a YubiKey. And I think that everybody is moving towards that. I mean, my Gmail has a YubiKey now, or hardware key. Yahoo has a hardware key for email. Coinbase has a hardware key. And many of the other exchanges are moving and have to move in that direction to give you a lot more security that you can't be hacked. But hardware keys are just, I don't know how you'd hack a hardware key.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's good that, you know, we're moving in a positive direction, but the unfortunate...
How is cryptocurrency going to enter the mainstream if people are not comfortable depositing and buying cryptocurrency online without the fear of getting hacked or stolen?
Right, right.
It just seems like a fundamental premise for those who want to advance the future of cryptocurrency, that you've got to be assured that the assets you purchase are secure. And there's some exchanges that are less secure than others, and in part because of their security up front that don't have sufficient two-factor authentication in place.
And we're finding, like, I was reading up on some recent SIM swapping stories, and it's definitely entering the mainstream media more and more, similar to cryptocurrency. There was actually just about a week ago a celebrity SIM swapping crime ring that was busted. So it's certainly not something that's going away, and probably more aggressive than ever. And so I, in addition to what you've shared so far, I'd love to hear your thoughts on what more people can do to protect themselves. And, you know, maybe in addition to a hardware key, if someone has crypto, et cetera.
Certainly with all of their accounts that they value. I mean, I'm not talking about the Starbucks and those types of accounts if they're valuing, but certainly the ones they value, they have to have a two-factor authentication in place, and with a minimum use Google Authenticator or Authy at a minimum. They can't use SMS authentication for two-factor authentication. That's perilous at best. So another piece of advice is that if you can, don't use your email address as your username. That's just too easy for people to guess, and that's the first thing people are going to use to guess, trying to get into your account. So those two things will save you an awful lot of grief.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're also, I was looking at your Twitter, you're also you know, obviously very open to share your story to help build awareness for others, but you're also very helpful in offering to help others who have become victims of similar attacks as well. And I'm sure that's become very important to you throughout this grueling experience.
Well, I don't have a lot of sympathy for either AT&T or the exchange in which I was hacked, because, I was out 100 Bitcoin, and they both just threw up their hands and said, not my fault. And what do you mean it's not your fault? I followed all your rules, did everything you tell me to, and then you throw up your hands when I have a loss. So I think that's fundamentally wrong. And I have been indignant about it. So.
Yeah, not 100 Bitcoin now would be worth, I mean, Bitcoin is like much higher than it was then, but still it's quite high then. But right now it'd be worth around 7.7 million, which is, I mean, if people are experiencing the type of attacks that you are, I mean, this is not something that companies can, you know, ignore.
Well, they can't be exposed to that risk, certainly at that level. But again, at the time, you know, cryptocurrency was still not nearly as high as it is now. It was more about, I was more concerned about the just loss of identity.
Yeah.
It was the identity problem that was the most, had me most in the tank about, not the money.
Did you get any of your...
Today it would be about the money.
Yeah. Did you get any of your photos or videos or anything? Were you able to recover anything at all?
Actually, I was finally able to recover everything, but it took me 2.5 months to get there.
Oh, wow.
I did not have my Gmail account for 2.5 months as I worked through the process to recover. That's where I had everything stored. So everybody says, oh, yeah, store things online. And you know, the cloud is great. And I happen to believe that. But, you know, when you can't get access to it anymore, and you have no help from Gmail or Google to help you recover your assets, that's not helpful at all. And so I really had to risk there, losing everything, you know, all my stored, all my documents, all, because I had drank the Kool-Aid about putting everything in the cloud and into my Google account.
Right. Well, I'm very glad to hear that you were able to recover that, because those memories, you know, they're invaluable.
Oh, absolutely.
And so, Greg, is there anything else you would want listeners to know about your story or SIM swapping or anything like that?
No, I think the advice to everybody out there is that if you are going to dabble in this space, do what you can not to have your username be your email address. And at a minimum, cannot use SMS authentication for two-factor authentication. That if they do offer hardware or YubiKey solution, you must use it. And we didn't talk about whitelisting, but that's a whole other thing. But there are other ways to protect yourself from people getting into your account and using it on a quick basis. And hold all your crypto offline if you can, into cold storage. So that's probably the best advice I can give right now.
Sound advice, very actionable for folks too. So I really appreciate you sharing that. Well, Greg, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been a great conversation. And I'm just, again, I'm so grateful to you for sharing your story with us. And I'm glad that you at least have been able to, you know, recover some of your loss, not all yet by any means, but I'm glad you've been able to work with some authorities to help with that. And also you're working diligently to build awareness about this issue.
Well, thank you very much for having me on. I mean, I really believe in the crypto story. It's only in its infancy right now. So go crypto.
Go crypto. Thanks, Greg.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. Joining me today was Greg Bennett, an angel investor in the Seattle, Washington area, whom you can find on LinkedIn and follow on Twitter at Greg Z. Bennett. And you can listen to all of our podcast episodes at cybercrime.radio.